Welcome to Intel on AI, a podcast series that brings you the latest on cutting-edge tech driving artificial intelligence in the enterprise today. And now your hosts, Derek Osborne and Emily Hudson.
Hello and welcome. My name is Derek Osborne.
And this is Emily Hudson.
And this is another edition of Intel on AI podcast. Today's guest is Matt Price, and he is here with us from ZeroFox, where he is the principal research engineer. Welcome, Matt.
Hi, glad to be here.
Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and the work being done at ZeroFox?
Absolutely. I'm a principal research engineer, as you mentioned, at ZeroFox, and I lead up what's called our advanced analysis team. And this is really our data science team. So our main mandate at the company is to develop various artificial intelligence and machine learning capabilities to help protect our customers when they engage online in the digital world.
Talk to me about the kind of issues we're facing in this social media world. You know, one term I just learned recently is called deepfakes, and I didn't really know this was a thing until very recently. Is that something that you would help identify?
So we actually do have a deepfake capability right now that we've been testing out. And we actually gave a talk at Black Hat about deepfakes as well, both how they can be used offensively and defensively. So the ZeroFox platform using deep learning models behind the scenes is actually able to detect some of the deepfakes that we are seeing on social media today.
And for those who are new to the subject, what is a deepfake? And yeah, how would you use it offensively?
Yeah, so a deepfake is really any kind of digital media that has been manipulated using artificial intelligence, in particular deep learning models. And that's how you get the word deepfake. It's a combination of fake media plus deep learning. There's a couple of different types of deepfakes that we're already seeing out in the wild. One are audio deepfakes, and these are audio streams that have been edited to include some person's voice in a synthetic way. So for example, you could take the voice of a CEO of a large organization, mimic his voice to make him say anything that you want, which you've seen some attacks of like that happening in Europe already. The other type of deepfakes, the ones that we focus on, are deepfake videos. And these are generally videos where someone's face has been manipulated so that they're saying words that they never said before. So again, you can imagine that a large CEO of an organization possibly giving some kind of media interview, you could take that and doctor it using these deep learning models to make that CEO say something that could potentially tank the stock price of that company.
And how would you use this on the offense? Like, when would this be? I feel like deepfakes carry kind of a negative connotation.
Yeah, so that's kind of the offensive use, is kind of that scenario I described where you could essentially take a media interview of any individual and have them say whatever you like. So you can imagine perhaps on like the eve of an election, for example, you release a deepfake video of a politician saying something that could cause voters to not vote for that politician, for example. So that would be like an example of like offensive use of a deepfake and an influence operation. We at ZeroFox don't actually produce deepfakes. We're in the business of detecting them. So luckily, we don't have to worry about the ethics of releasing a video like that.
So when you go in and you're detecting it, there's a lot of social media, and these are not streams that you're able to simply plug into and pull it from a server. Can you tell me a little bit about the data pipeline that you use to be able to pull the data needed to run your models?
Yeah, it's an extremely complex data ingest platform that we have. Every single like social network, if we're talking about specifically about social networks, have different data formats. So one of the things that our data ingest pipeline has to do is go out, talk to these social networks, pull back the information that we need to protect our customers, and then transform it into a slightly more structured format that our models can actually work with. A lot of what happens on the data ingest side is parsing out like the relevant content that we actually need to look at, identifying the various types of media that can be attached, such as videos, images, and so on. So being able to extract that information and kind of lay it out in a structured format is one of the key roles that our data pipeline forms before the data hits the models.
And when you go and you're pulling in that data, the vast majority of the data that you're pulling in from these data sources are going to be original content. They will not be deep fakes. How do you adjust your training process to account for the vast majority of your inputs being non-deep fake content?
Yeah, so if we're talking specifically about our video capabilities, what we try to do is we try to focus on the context around the video. So for example, if you can identify a number of comments on the video saying like, this is fake, this is a deep fake, this isn't true, like this politician never said that, something along those lines, you can kind of add that context to the video and go, hey, like this is probably something we need to look into a little bit more. So really trying to take not just the video, but the context around the video really helps us identify what the content is that we should be looking at.
So when you go and you pull all this data and then you pivot to the training, can you tell us a little bit about the hardware infrastructure that you use for training these models?
Sure. So training for us normally takes a couple of steps. One of the first steps is we'll generally start off on some kind of AWS CPU instance. Depending on the problem, the size of the instance varies, but it's generally one of the compute optimized instances, one of the C5s that Amazon has. And from there, we'll start with small data sets, iterate a little bit on the model, see if any of that, if it's an update to a model, see if any of the changes seem to be changing the model in the direction that we want. If it's a new model, just see, hey, are we starting to capture whatever information it is that we're trying to capture? So once we're done with kind of that initial proof of concept phase, we'll move on to actual training, which is where we'll build up a large data set of images or videos or whatever text content, depending on what we're looking at. Once we build up that large data set, which is usually human labeled, we'll then go and train the model. If it's a text model, we generally tend to train on CPUs. If it's images or video, we tend to train on GPU. And then after that, we'll extract the weight and we build a compute optimized version of our model and then deploy that to a C5 2XL that runs in our production cluster.
And so then you have all of your production inferences being run on the C5, is that correct?
Yep, for all of our models, they're all run on the AWS C5 2XLs.
So beyond running on Intel platforms in AWS, what other tools from Intel are helping you achieve these performance improvements and overall improve system efficiency?
Well, a couple of our deep learning models are focused on video and image content. So obviously, like when you're training large scales of images, GPUs tend to be more efficient. But the way that our production system works is we get a message and it may have 1 to 4 images. So at that point, running on a GPU is actually more expensive comparatively than running on CPU. Beyond that, what we found is a software package called OpenVINO that Intel has released. And this actually contains neural networks that are optimized for the actual CPU that your model is running on. And it really does this by taking advantages of certain instructions that aren't exposed in kind of these frameworks that are generically compiled. So really by leveraging OpenVINO, we're able to get a huge increase in our model performance, especially for our object detection model, which ended up running, I think it was like 2.3 times faster than our original model, which was still using just the deep neural network package in OpenCV.
Now, I have a question related to your company. What inspired your company to get started in this area?
What really got the company started was that our CEO, James Foster, actually discovered that there was a niche in the security market about 8 years ago now, where no one was really focusing on social media and the risks that were there. And as more and more companies move and kind of transition into the digital world, they engage a lot more online. And that's exposing companies to yet another kind of risk. Similar to how when companies started adopting email, now like one of the number one attack vectors and ways to break into a company is through a phishing email. As more and more employees and companies start to engage online, there's a lot more attack surfaces. Those are just as effective, if not more effective, than email now. So because of this exposed attack surface that other security companies weren't looking at, that's the problem that our CEO recognized and where the company has gone.
What are some of the other offerings that ZeroFox is bringing?
Obviously, beyond the social media, we also monitor the deep and dark web. So doing intelligence gathering is something that ZeroFox provides. We also do a lot of impersonation detection for like famous political figures or even celebrities. We'll do a lot of kind of impersonation takedown. We also do a lot of work with scams. So there's not a lot of financial fraud that happens on social media. So identifying any kind of financial fraud that's happening and trying to get that content taken down or anyone is affected is another capability we offer as well.
That's incredible. You know, hearing what all these things you're doing at ZeroFox, I feel like we have the makings of some sort of superhero show going on right now.
We actually do have a Fox costume that we take to some of the conferences as kind of like entertainment on the side. So that may be our mascot.
Have you ever worn the Fox costume, Matt?
I have not.
Okay. Well, it's never too late. Not to be all doomsday, but a lot of us have sort of grown up as social media has grown up. And it's gone from something that was like fun to do in your spare time and post on MySpace to something that's part of everyone's lives on a constant basis, which really speaks to the necessity of the services your company is providing.
Are you able to work with social media providers, contact them and have them remove the content?
We do. That's how we take down content. We don't actually go and take it down. We work with the social media providers to do that. And we have to tell them like, hey, this is the terms of service that it's breaking. But at the end of the day, it's always working with these companies as a partner to identify content and take action on it.
Are they willing to participate to help, or is it difficult to get them to remove content?
Most of the social network providers that we work with are actually good to work with. Obviously, they have a lot of content and there's a lot of things happening on their system every second. So companies like ZeroFox are kind of like another tool in their toolbox, so to speak, to help improve their platforms.
So for listeners who want to learn more about ZeroFox and the work you're doing and definitely not see any pictures of Matt wearing a fox costume, where should they go on the web?
Yeah, you can check out ZeroFox.com.
Excellent. Thanks so much for joining us today, Matt. It's been a really interesting discussion. This has been Emily Hudson.
And this is Derek Osborne.
And you're listening to Intel on AI.